Spiegel and Holmes.
I'm just saying, Lawrence, you were saying some stuff last week, if my memory is correct.
That's why Danny left.
Afternoons on the Score.
Foul line right, Vooch driving, left-hand dribble deep of the paint. Gives it up left side, Green, far quarter. Ball just buried his seventh triple of the ball game deep in the left corner.
So we, I think, also have a responsibility to make sure that he's in a position, you know, where he can play after this season, where it's not one of these things where, you know, it's not managed correctly or we're not putting him in a situation to be effective. Could that be 15 to 18 minutes a game? Maybe. Could it be 20 to 25? Maybe. There's just a lot of things. If you look at him as a basketball player, he's an elite point guard that certainly, you know, warrants being out on the court a lot. But is he capable of doing that physically? And those are things we just don't know right now. And until we get to training camp and he's out there, we'll have a better feel of how we can maybe manage him and allow him to be a productive player.
Billy Donovan talking about Lonzo Ball, who is hoping to make his re-debut with the Bulls tonight. We will have the game for you here on the Score,
right
starting
here
at 6:45 with our pregame. Yes, Chuck, we'll have the game.
Joe Bag of Donuts himself.
Yeah, he still owes.
No, he brought him in for us, though.
No, not to us.
The Colts, yeah.
Yeah, the Colts.
I'm gonna go ahead and say the Colts are never getting those donuts.
What?
The timing of it is
you
just
know what?
Everything.
I think you're right, because if they were going to get the donuts, Chuck would have brought the donuts with him when the Bulls played the Pacers last week.
See? But he wasn't interested in really bringing the donuts.
So I think you're right. The Colts are not getting those donuts.
So Lonzo Ball is a unique and beautiful basketball player. A point guard who doesn't demand the ball to drive and dish in the classic pick and roll point guard way. He's a point guard who loves to run and get everybody going. He's a point guard who doesn't really look for his own shot, except when now it has become a spot up three. He's got a really unique profile that would have fit beautifully in how the Bulls were designed to hit spot up threes, play great defense on any position, essentially.
Can switch 1 through 4, maybe 1 through 5 in a certain matchup.
Incredible. Just like what a unique and beautiful profile. And he's a great story to come out of a very strange family situation, seemingly as like a stable psychological individual. He's a miracle in a lot of ways. But this thing, if he actually comes back and plays, he becomes a medical miracle.
What is next for the Big Baller Brand?
Big Baller Brand about to do some major things, boy. Like I said, I'm about to get into these universities with these Triple B uniforms and things like that. I'm about to come out with some water.
He was about to invent water.
Did you guys get yours, by the way?
I did not.
Are you feeling a lot better?
I feel fine.
Yeah.
Water?
Oh, you just did normal water?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could be feeling better.
Hey, check out this guy over here just drinking regular water.
Yeah.
That BBB water.
I feel so good having had LeVar Ball's water. Superior, also
careful
inferior.
How you say it. Yeah.
Wait, you're carrying LeVar Ball's water? That's interesting.
That and drinking it.
Okay.
Whatever it takes. Like, that's a very important thing. I agree with you about Lonzo. Basketball IQ through the roof.
Yeah, man.
Really smart basketball player. The thing that was so exciting about him as a Bull are some of the things you're talking about. Him being a transition point guard. Someone who was going to be able to really take the next and maybe make guys like Zach LaVine, for example, better. Because, one, he was going to be able to get him the ball in space. He didn't need to take his own shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he could take the toughest perimeter defense opportunity.
Yep.
Whatever that mission needed to be, he could take it. Or you could switch. He could help you out in that regard. You have him and Alex Caruso as teammates. Your perimeter defense goes sky high. To not have Lonzo Ball, and the Bulls still, we are 2.5 years since the Lonzo injury. We are 1,006 days since Lonzo got injured.
1,006 days. Lawrence, that is a little less than 3 years.
Let me tell you how long ago it was.
Please.
That same week, John Lester retired.
That's the last time Lonzo Ball played for the Bulls.
Eric Weddle, that same week, was called out of retirement to come play in just the playoffs for the Rams.
Wow. Eric Weddle's the safety. Yeah, that's crazy. Those two things happened 1,006 days ago.
Yeah.
That's nuts, man.
Yeah.
This dude does not have his own cartilage or his own meniscus.
He got a cadaver in there.
A bone allograft. There is somebody else's leg inside of his leg.
It's pretty crazy that Lonzo, like when all of this happened, we got to the, Julia Poe, by the way, did an incredible job of doing like the chronicling of all of this. When we got to the off season of him not returning and then everyone being like, yeah, he might not play basketball again. I started thinking about life for Lonzo and just
sure
if he can just live a healthy life going forward, I think that that's a victory. I never thought about him rejoining the Bulls in a meaningful way other than it being meaningful for him.
I get it. Like, as just like a point that happened in his life. And that still might be what this is about.
Absolutely.
These are preseason games.
And this is a bad Bulls team.
And it's a bad Bulls team that has room for this kind of thing. And it also is a beautiful thing that you're doing for your own player in terms of around the league and as a reputation around the league. You're showing the league that you're going to have your guys back and pay him for all this time as they have and even give him a chance in the final year of his deal to actually come back and play. Now, we'll see what he looks like.
Right. It was almost annoying the way that the Bulls didn't divorce themselves from Lonzo, but now you can see like it was that Dan would always talk about like having that carrot. The carrot of there's a place for you if you can rehab.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make a spot for you if you can rehab. We'll get you back on the floor if you're healthy enough to do it. And now they've gone through all of this stuff, the different rehabs, the starts and stops that he's had in the rehab process. He's finally been playing scrimmages of 5-on-5 against NBA caliber players. So I'm wishing him a lot of luck.
I feel like you're not joining me in awe at the idea of him literally taking another person's leg, a dead person's leg, and putting that inside his own leg.
Oh, I'm completely in awe.
It's the bone, the cartilage, and the meniscus.
Oh, yeah.
It's all from the same cadaver, right?
I believe so.
But maybe not, though, because they're different timed surgeries. Like the cartilage transplant, I believe, was in March of 2023. I got to check this. So that was the third surgery. So I think he's got multiple people. I mean, think of, you could go around and choose different athletes. I'll take that guy's cartilage, that guy's meniscus, and give me that dude's bone.
It's a real thing. My dad has been having it done to his knee for like the last 3 years.
Bits and pieces?
They started regrowing his cartilage. That's insane. Took it out of his knee, put it in a Petri dish, had it regrown, and then put it back in his knee. So this is probably a portion of Lonzo's actual cartilage that they're regrowing.
Is he playing tonight, your
dad? My dad is playing tonight as well. Yeah. Yeah, he's Lonzo's backup. I got a couple more things for you in the last 1,000 days, though, if you want.
Sure.
There's been exactly one Capitol uprising in the last 1,000 days.
Lonzo had no part in that.
The Suez Canal was blocked one time.
You don't know where he was that day.
That's true. Good point.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been with the team, so he very well could have been at the Capitol. The Suez Canal has been blocked one time.
We don't think that Lonzo did that.
A cargo ship. We don't.
I don't believe.
That's the point of this. We don't know.
Lawrence, do you know? Excuse me, LaWrence, do you know anything about this?
I don't.
Okay.
Texas has hated abortion.
Oh.
And passed that law
that happened.
In the last horrible decision
that happened a long time ago.
Texas's part,
and then
in the last 1,000 days.
And then Kansas, by the way, like went in a very different direction than most people thought they were going to on a similar law.
I like when Kansas went in new directions. More of a fusion sound than their earlier stuff.
I agree. I think that it made them a better band.
Yeah.
And basketball team.
I like a vacation. Fusion sound. Take a nice trip over there. By the way, Shane actually had a dead person's instincts implanted the last commercial break. So that's something that he has done.
That checks out. That checks out.
It seems to work.
A dead producer's instincts.
That seems to work.
All right. You said we could hear from Lonzo Ball.
I did. This is what Lonzo Ball had to say as he is on the eve of returning to the court with a uniform on.
Billy said the other day, you know, obviously the COVID kind of slowed things down for you at the beginning of camp, and there was a couple days where there was some soreness. Was that a concern of yours, or was that expected with the knee, that there's going to be some rough patches with it?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to manage it all year. That's just the reality of it. COVID definitely sent me back. It was more about just getting my weight up. I lost like 10 pounds, so back to normal now. I feel a lot better, so I'll be ready to play tonight.
Are you on a strict minutes count as far as this is the way it's going to be, or is it something that slowly will up and up and up and up?
Well, hopefully it gets up and up, but right now I'm on a 16-minute restriction, so okay. No more than 16. Obviously, it could be less than that, but that's the number right now.
Lonzo, what does it mean to you just to finally be playing in a game again after all you've been through?
Just happy, man. Full of joy. Happy to be back. Put the uniform on, go out there in front of the United Center fans. You know, miss them a lot. I miss my team a lot, so just to be out there and be available, you know, that means the world to me.
Are there any nerves or anything like that?
Not really. I'm just happy to be back. I mean, I've been playing basketball for 20 years, so the game hasn't really changed, you know. Just happy to be back on the court.
What are you going
to
do for the next, like, 6 hours? Are you a nap guy, and are you going to be able to nap?
I got to go eat, do some more treatment stuff, and then definitely take a nap. I take a nap before every game.
I know you talked about kind of the soreness being normal. What does just like a normal day feel like in terms of, are you feeling soreness when you walk around? Is it something that you only feel it like you when you cut? Kind of when does that feel?
It really depends on the day. Every day is different. Like I said, it's always going to be something there. That's just the reality of it. I just got to take care of myself, my body the best way I can, and just be ready to play each and every game.
You were always confident that you would be back, and now that this is the day, take us back. What made you so confident and determined that you would be back today?
I think it's the belief in myself, you know, knowing what I was feeling, knowing that I was, you know, a good age to come back from it, and I'm just trusting in the doctors and people around me, and I ultimately got back. It's on the court.
Hey, how important is that? I mean, this organization could have been, I mean, you know the business of basketball. This organization could have easily said, hey, this is an expiring deal. We're trying to go through a somewhat of a youth movement. We got Josh. We can't help you find your path in your career after this. How important has it been for you that this organization seems to be going out of the way to make sure, whether you're in their future plans or not, that I see you, the league sees you, that you do have a future?
Very important. You know, I got nothing but love and respect for them. Like you said, they could have just pushed me to the side and kept moving. Instead, they've been with me the whole way and giving me the best treatment, best help I can get. So, like I said, all the hard work, it wasn't just for me. It was from a collective unit, and it all paid off to have me back on the court today.
How would you just sum up the last 2.5 years?
Long. Really long. But looking back on it, it went by a lot faster than I thought. You know, getting the first surgery and then coming back and then having the second and third and then telling me 18 more months recovery. You know, that sounds crazy in the moment, but, you know, now I'm here and it's all behind me now, so.
Lonzo, there's a lot of love and respect growing your way from around the league. Alex Caruso put out a tweet the other day. I don't know how much of that you're seeing, but what does that say to you that, you know, the NBA is obviously a brotherhood, but what does that say to you that so many people are taking pride or happiness?
Well, I just appreciate all the support, man. Like I said, it wasn't just me on this journey. A lot of people have been along with me. A lot of people have been tuning in, you know, giving me words of wisdom, kindness, care, and all that went a long way, for sure.
Hey, Lonzo, how anxious are you to see, I mean, guarding guys out here is one thing, but is that the thing you're, I mean, Billy mentioned it, that, you know, physically he wants to see how you are attacking the point of attack like you used to. Are you even questioning? I wonder what that's going to be like. I wonder if I'm going to, in the back of my mind, well, don't overdo it, or, I mean.
I'm going to just go out there and play freely, man. Not thinking about it too much. You know, I'm cleared to play, so I'm going to play.
God, I can't even imagine what it's like. And to get in that mindset of going out there to play freely. You know, I'm going to say this. I'm not going to even comment tomorrow on whatever his quickness looks like, whatever his athleticism looks like.
Just the feat itself will be enough.
Just the feat itself, because he can talk about wanting to play free, but how are you not in your own head worried about every little motion? So
That's why I love the nap question, because it might be your routine, but how? Like today, are you even going to be able to get your 40 minutes or whatever you need to get yourself ready and ready to go? Because you're so excited about what's taken 2.5 years to get back to.
I find myself so excited I can hardly sleep.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
Get yourself a nice bohemian beer and
set up.
Say Watanabe.
Exactly right. Yeah, man, that's crazy. So you and I have been thinking about comps for this kind of thing, and there is none medically. I think there's an NHL guy who's undergone the same procedures and is trying to make a comeback at the same time. So this is like at the forefront of science, because there are comps for like people who missed a lot of time with injury and then came back in the NBA, and it's been knees, but not this particular surgery and process.
Yeah, when you're talking about like cadaver tissue and that being, that's why I keep going back to the marvel of this would have just been, does Lonzo walk with a normal gait?
Right.
And it's more than that. Now he can actually run and jump. Hopefully he's still able to do some of the things that he used to do. That's amazing that is possible after what is kind of an unprecedented surgery at this level.
Mm-hmm.
When you are then being asked to go back and compete with the greatest that do it in the NBA.
I think it is unfair to put what Grant Hill did in his NBA career post-severe injury, it's unfair to put that even as a possibility for Lonzo Ball. Because Grant Hill ended up having an incredibly long and viable career where he was not the athletic version of himself at the beginning, but Grant Hill lasted a long time.
I mean, isn't the comp Brandon Roy?
But Brandon Roy didn't last. It kept degenerating and degenerating.
It did, but he had retired, and then he came back in 2012.
But he wasn't really able to play.
No, but he made it back to, I'm going to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, if we look at it through that prism, because we don't know what's going to happen with Lonzo.
Yeah.
But if you go from a devastating injury that knocks you out for a year and a half, a year shorter than Lonzo, you retire at 27 because you don't think it's going to happen, and then you work your way back to at least making it back to an NBA game.
Well, I want to aim a little higher than that.
Okay.
And try to give him something realistic. And the name I keep coming back to in my head is Sean Livingston.
Ooh.
And Sean Livingston was a unbelievably athletic and great basketball prospect from Peoria, from downstate. And Livingston was a do-everything kind of explosive point guard and ball handler at 6'7", was thought to be like, this is a dude who can absolutely do anything and everything on a basketball court.
And pretty much missed 2.5 seasons of basketball.
592 days before he was able to come back the first time.
Right.
And then he missed a whole bunch more games and then came back and then missed a whole bunch more games. And eventually, when he came back with the Heat, eventually, it had been like 900 plus days since he played regularly. And he went on to have a lot more seasons. He went on to play, 8 more seasons, 10 more seasons, including a stint in Golden State between the ages of 29 and 33. Where he wins three titles. As the commander of the second team offense. Like, he was a beautiful player to watch in those early days of the Golden State dynasty with Steph and Clay. And it was Livingston. Before it was Iguodala, it was Livingston who they would trust to run the second team offense in that beautiful version of the Princeton system. Like, a great, and he got it, and he did everything, and he was freaking awesome. And sometimes he'd run with the first team, but he was the point guard of the second team. That kind of secondary NBA life would be an absolute dream for Lonzo Ball.
Well, I don't want to jump over, no pun intended, jump over Brandon Roy's accomplishment, though, to
That's
go
fair.
All the way to 3-time NBA championship. Like, to me, Lonzo playing in regular season games is amazing enough. And then if he's able, if he's fine and he's not struggling and that 16-minute restriction gets lifted,
yeah,
and he's back to being an NBA starter on your team, like, that's amazing.
You're right. And a texter says it feels more like Bo Jackson to them in terms of a surgery that you should not be able to play professional sports with, And then there you are. And Bo just getting back with an artificial hip.
Yeah.
And playing professional baseball with an artificial hip is outrageous, especially at the time with what they knew about artificial hip technology.
Yeah, all of those surgeries that ended careers prematurely, like Bo Jackson's or Gale Sayers,
right,
where you know you just wonder if there would have been better technology for Gale, like what that could have looked like for him.
Yeah.
But Go ahead.
No, it's like somebody else referenced Tommy John, and the crazy thing about Tommy John is that guy pitched for 13 years after Tommy John's surgery.
Right.
13 years!
And Patrick Manley's father-in-law, right?
That is correct. That is correct. But like, so that's like, that's, I mean, if it's Tommy John stuff that we're talking about, and we're talking about this surgery as an option for professional athletes, then that is an unbelievable category.
Yeah. The idea of something that's not really, really hasn't been done, and you get to play at the highest level again is completely shocking.
Yeah.
And I hope that he gets what he needs. And maybe it kind of sounded like, I love the quote, I'm happy, I'm full of joy.
Yeah, man. Because that dude played full of joy. That's why we started with what kind of player he is and was, and you dream of being again. Sean Livingston, when he got hurt February of 2007, I remember it because I was watching it live. He tore the ACL, the PCL, the lateral meniscus, sprained his medial collateral ligament, and dislocated his patella.
Yeah.
He did all of that on the same play. It's one of the ugliest injuries of all time.
Yep.
And came back to be a legit stud in the NBA.
And an NBA champion, which is really, really cool. So good luck to Lonzo tonight and going forward. And I think you're right. Like, there's no real reason to do a scouting report on what he looks like in the game. The miracle is happening with him just checking in, if that makes sense.
It definitely does.
When we come back, let's talk a little bit of baseball.
There's a paradox of fandom that's going on right now. I do believe, as we're watching some behemoths wage war nightly, want to talk about it with you, Lawrence Holmes, and you, the Score listener, right here on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.
Judge, it's a high fly to center. Back goes Thomas on the track near the wall. She's gone! Aaron Judge hit the ball so high, you wondered. It came down in Monument Park. It's a Judgian blast. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
You know, and this place, this shows you how beloved this guy is. This place just went wild. People jumping up and down all over. I think a lot of it is because of the frustration that they know that Judge has been going through. That was something to see everyone in this place, I mean, jumping up and down like kids.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
How about we do a little baseball here and talk about last night? I did not like the baseball that was played last night. We will get to that part of it. But you're feeling something, Spiegs, while you're watching the ALCS and the NLCS. What is it?
It's that I hate evil empires. I've always hated evil empires.
I think that's one of the best albums that Rage Against the Machine did.
Well, you know, no fault to them. And I understand that evil empires in sports are simply taking advantage of the system, like the Yankees, who I've hated forever. Born of Red Sox fandom, but whatever. Like the Dodgers, who I hate now and hated with their offseason, just buying, because they've been systematically part of making sure the system stays possible for them to circumvent for years and years so they can stay there. And I always used to root against the Lakers as a kid, root against the Cowboys as a kid. I rooted against Duke. Like, I rooted against Notre Dame. Like, I've always found myself that person and found it somewhat distasteful for different things. So I'm watching these games, and I'm like, oh, God, who am I supposed to root for here? Yankees? Dodgers? Mets? Ooh, the plucky Mets with their $300 million payroll, you know?
So, well, I mean, there's a team you could root for, Cleveland.
There is, I could. But the truth is, I want to see Dodgers-Yankees. And part of the reason I want to see Dodgers-Yankees is that even though I kind of hate those teams and what they represent in a lot of ways, I really like the star players a lot. I mean, Mookie Betts is my favorite baseball player.
Mine too.
I love that we share that. Freddie Freeman seems to be a lovely guy. A good dad going through some personal hell, battling through an injury right now and trying to show up and play.
Man, watching him run the bases and watching his teammates like appreciate.
Yeah,
you're hurt, and we know you're hurting in a lot of different ways, and you are still out there giving 100% of whatever it is that you have. That's impressive, and he doesn't have to.
No, and they can play Max Muncy over there and shuffle things up. Shohei Ohtani is one of the athletic marvels of our lifetimes and all time, and we're watching that.
There's a bunch of good players on the Dodgers to enjoy, like Teoscar Hernandez and Will Smith.
Right, right.
Or Max Muncy for that. And then you go over to the Yankees and you go, what's not to love about Aaron Judge?
Dude, Aaron Judge seems to be an incredibly mature, cool, like thoughtful, morally sound captain and adult on that team. And then he said this last night about that home run that kept sailing out to center field. I saw this quote this morning about his home run last night.
What were your emotions as you went around the bases?
I was excited it went out. You know, you never know on these windy, chilly nights what that ball's going to do when you hit the center here. But the Ghosts were pulling it out there to Monument Park, that's for sure.
The Ghosts pulling the ball out to Monument Park. Dude is aware of the history of the franchise he's on, and he's always been respectful of it, and he's incredibly highly paid and has only gotten better since he's been highly paid, busting his ass. So I find myself hating these teams, but really liking a lot of the star players and wanting to see them. And that is an inherent paradox. That's a weird place to be.
Well, I don't want you to be in that place anymore. And the reason why I don't want you to be in that place anymore, Speaks, is because we do a talk show in Chicago. This is exactly what the Cubs should be. What the Mets have done, what the Dodgers have done, what the Yankees have done, what the Phillies have done, this is what the Cubs should be.
I know, it's what the Red Sox eventually did, and I liked that.
And
I know.
Since we are doing a radio show in Chicago, let me also add to it, remember who did not want Mets ownership to be who owns the Mets? Jerry Reinsdorf.
For sure.
And this is exactly why. Because he knew that that owner was going to spend.
Absolutely.
And it's something that every White Sox fan is hoping that Jerry Reinsdorf. So there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I hope that we get that on that level so it can be rubbed in the faces of ownership here in Chicago and go, If you're gonna go
yeah.
over the CBT, uh-huh. go all the way.
All right, so Lauren, I completely understand where you are, but I'm sure there are some people out there, and even though we know logically that's what should happen, that the Cubs should join that fray, obviously, there is still part of me connected to the fandom of my youth and 20s and 30s and whatever that still finds it distasteful when I see organizations buying, throwing good money after bad.
So you're going to be upset if Juan Soto's a Cub next year?
Didn't say that.
Okay. Because that's what should happen.
Uh-huh.
Like, it won't, but that's what should happen, is that you should want your team to go out and try to do everything they can to win the World Series that's available for them to win. And I want to see that. But to get to your point,
you can expose my hypocrisy with ease. I offer it to people sometimes, you know, thoroughly clearly. And that's what the economics of baseball does to me, because I love the game and I love the players and I love aspiring to greatness and I love intelligent team building and I want organizations to take advantage of all that stuff. I just happen to hate the Yankees and have hated historically when teams do it.
Fair enough. Let me add something else. Since we are baseball romantics and we do care about baseball history, one thing that I think would be really fascinating about Dodgers versus Yankees
mm-hmm.
is you would have two Black American MVPs playing in the World Series. Remember, this has been a thing in baseball.
For sure.
Why aren't more Black Americans playing baseball? Now, I'm putting the modifier in there because I always find it reductive when people say Black people aren't playing baseball. There are tons of Black people who are playing Major League Baseball. They're just not American.
Black Latins.
Yeah, and that's a struggle for people to understand the diaspora, and then we get into a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Russ and I, at some point, we'll have the conversation with you, because Russ and I are very simpatico on this, and he has studied it as someone who is a Spanish speaker, like a fluent Spanish speaker, mm-hmm. when he was down in the Dominican Republic. But there's an opportunity for baseball to go, would you look at this? Here's Mookie Betts. He's an MVP, and he's a lot of people's favorite player. Here's Aaron Judge. Would you look at this guy? He's 6'8". You got a 5'9" guy and a 6'8" guy. Both of them are super likable.
Yep.
They're people that should be carrying the torch of baseball forward, and you would have that as a counterbalance to the hand-wringing that always comes up around Jackie Robinson Day, mm-hmm. where we get the report of, well, do the White Sox even have a black American on their team?
Right.
You know, how many teams around the league even have this? There's that. But you're right. Like, the idea of looking at teams that you hate and players that you love.
Well, but what you're saying about Mookie and Judge is super powerful to consider and think about that as an added bonus to what would undoubtedly be the best possible matchup for Major League Baseball.
Oh, sure, because the ratings are going to be through the roof.
Ratings will be through the roof.
Exactly what they would want.
It's exactly what they would want. It's markets 1 and 2, and it's the highest profile players and stars. And if healthy, you would get Gerrit Cole against Ohtani. You know, and you'd get all those things.
Speaks, I want to stay here on this. I think it's worth us discussing in another segment. There's also some sound that you have got to hear from last night, because the base running was so terrible.
By one of our guys.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one, uh-huh. but he was one of them. So we're going to share that. We'll keep a little bit of this baseball discussion going. Spiegel and Holmes talking baseball, and then we'll get back to a little bit of Bears at 4 o'clock with Patrick Manley here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Good vibes, Ben.
Afternoons on The Score.
Be an 0-1 to Judge. And the pitch swung on. A high pop in the infield. The shortstop, Rocchio, near second.
He drops the ball. He dropped the ball. It rolls to right field, and everyone's going to be safe. Torres scores, and the Yankees take a 1-0 lead. Do you remember Luis Castillo dropping that pop-up on A-Rod? Well, that's the same thing that happened.
There was some really terrible baseball played in the American League Championship Series last night.
Welcome back, John Sterling. I'm retired. Oh, we made the playoffs? I would like to do the playoffs. Good for him.
Well, I'm glad that he's back. I mean, I'm sure it's very comfortable for Yankees fans that he is there. He just has to watch out for foul balls. Like, mm-hmm. that was a thing for him. But I thought that that game was poorly played, and it was poorly managed by Stephen Vogt.
By the way, their whole series, I mean, those pitchers walked 7 people in game 1. Cantillo himself had 4 wild pitches.
Ow! Ow! Ow!
This is why I adore Chris Tannehill.
He got, and John Sterling was hit with a foul ball.
Couldn't see it coming. It was coming right.
This was never last mind. Year.
Ow! Ow! Ow!
Having the presence of mind to really play up the ow.
I don't know if he was playing it up.
I think he was. I think he was making it nice and declarative and clean, knowing he was on the air, just leaning in to.
Got beamed.
I'm sure it hurt. I'm not saying it didn't hurt, but ow, ow, my arm, it's broken. I mean, it's similar.
Stephen Vogt overmanaged that game. And I've talked with a buddy of mine who covers this nationally, and was like, he didn't just overmanage this game. He overmanaged the Detroit series, and they got lucky, and they were able to win in advance. I couldn't believe it. I was sitting there going, so wait, you get Gerrit Cole, like, bases loaded. You've got bases loaded and you pinch hit in the fourth? Get out of here with that nonsense. Like, that whole, well, this is the way that it is in the postseason, and we have to just let guys play. Like, pinch hitting for Bo Naylor in that situation made no sense to me.
Yeah, and with that move, he burns Fry, who is a tremendous player.
And it ends up being a pop-up, right? The pop-up to third in that situation. And what are your guys thinking? When you pull your starter in the second, what are the other guys? Because they know that part of the reason that you're trailing is because Rocchio missed that ball.
Sure. But he did it in game 1. too. He had Alex Cobb out there for his first start in forever, and then Alex Cobb gets pulled, and then Alex Cobb is pulled from the roster the next day, so he can give himself another arm. Yeah, there's some seems like there's some postseason panic going on for Stephen Vogt.
There was also some really terrible base running. Jazz Chisholm got thrown out. I don't even know what Jazz was doing out there on the bases. And then Anthony Rizzo kind of lost where he was on the bases, and it ended up being something that I think that we should bring back for forever and forever.
And Rizzo is going to be picked off. He's in the middle between second and third. Hedges now throws to second, on the way to third, back to second, back to third, tagged out, end of inning. Boy, if that wasn't the Yankees, that's what they do, run the bases like drunks.
They run the bases like drunks. That is an all-timer.
Run the bases like drunks.
That's what they do. Run the bases like drunks.
I'm looking forward to an innumerable White Sox highlights being tagged with that.
I mean, that baseball last night was...
Silly Spees, you got to get on base before you do that. You know?
my bad.
Well, Rocchio dropping the pop-up was White Soxian, for sure. It was, like, really? Because he calls for it. He runs across second base to then drop it in front of the second baseman that's like, what the hell, man? I could have just caught it.
That's what they do. Run the bases like drunks.
Guy is drunk, but there he goes.
Kevin Harlan making the call.
I think it's insulting
to
drunks.
Be a man.
I think it's insulting to drunks. You know, like drunks would do a better job, I think, than the Yankees did at times last night.
Drinking less, winning more.
I mean, I do have, doesn't Rizzo have like a broken hand?
He's got two fingers that are broken. He doubled with two broken fingers.
Two fingers, Anthony Rizzo. That could be his nickname.
Ow. That's live sound of Rizzo's fingers being broken.
Or his hamstrings as he's trying to get caught in a rundown last night.
This feels like a wonderful excuse to remind everybody just how messed up on substances ball players used to be when they would play in the postseason. Have I ever shared this with you, Lawrence?
LSD?
No. Oh. But Bernie Carbo, the old Red Sox player, 1975, famous pinch hit homer in Game 6 of the 75 World Series. Bernie Carbo did pretty darn well in that series. He hit .429 with three hits, a double, and two home runs in seven at-bats. But he said this about his use of drugs during the World Series. Quote, I probably smoked two joints, drank about three or four beers, got to the ballpark, took some amphetamines, took a pain pill, drank a cup of coffee, chewed some tobacco, had a cigarette, and got up to the plate and hit.
All the drugs.
Everything he could find, the man did. He said, I played every game high. I was addicted to everything you could possibly be addicted to. I played the outfield sometimes when it looked like the stars were falling from the sky.
Sometimes the coffee that you got gave you a little extra. It had more than caffeine in it.
He wouldn't
Some
have
players'
even
nicknames even
the leaded,
you know, came from the fact that they would like to do stuff in between innings. Hmm. Maybe it would be in their back pocket. Maybe it would be in the form of a solid.
Oh, I see.
And you know, that's how you get a nickname.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just built like a rock?
No.
He wasn't a big fan of the Bob Seger song Like a Rock?
No.
You sure about just that?
Pointed arrow straight. I'm sure about that. I'm sure.
He was strong as he could be.
To speak to your point from the last segment where we were discussing like players that you like on teams that you hate. Bleeping Mauer.
Yeah. He's been out of baseball for a while.
He's in the Hall now.
It's just still there.
He's,
huh?
He's on the Hall. He's in the Hall on the backs of hitting the ball off the left field wall over on 35th and Shields every time. Oh, look at that. Another double for Joe Mauer on the south side of Chicago. Would you look at that?
That's amazing.
Bring in a lefty. Here's Matt Thornton. No, yeah. Doesn't matter. Here's a double off the wall again by bleeping Mauer.
And here's Justin Morneau.
Right.
And that's off the baggie.
Right. And the Twins score another run. Yeah, there you go.
Michael Kadire.
Oh, God.
Oh, I mean, we could go through like a Torrey Hunter.
Punto.
Hunter.
Nick Punto was the one. When Nick Punto had the success, it was like This is a disease. This is a sickness.
Lou Ford. Oh.
Torrey Hunter, coward, by the way, not keeping up his end of the bet, remember?
Was he supposed to be on the show?
The last iteration of this show? No, he was supposed to fly us out to do a show from his barbecue restaurant in, is it Texas?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, does it still
exist? Dallas? Yeah.
Oh, then we should be invited.
He didn't do it. He didn't do it. He made a bet and didn't come through.
Now, that was at least a good player.
But then did Super Bowl picks drunk from the golf course.
That's a win.
So maybe he made up for it.
You take that.
Here's Miguel Cabrera. Oh, you know what? You threw that 97 mile per hour fastball right by Miggy. You know what you should do? Throw it again and see what happens. Because guess what he did to you? He set you up, dummy, because he can hit 97 mile per hour fastball. Cabrera stepping out of the box like, wow, that was really... Woo, that fastball was really fast. I really hope he doesn't throw it again.
So did you guys...
Steps into the box. Now it's hit 425 feet.
Did you guys root against the Twins every time they were in the postseason?
No matter when.
Look, I'm actually...
Because I want to see the Dodgers and the Yankees keep going because I want to see the greatness.
Speaks, it's a weird space for me to be in. I actually didn't have a problem with any of the American League Central teams that made it this year. And if they would have advanced, I'm fine with it. Had the Twins made it, though, bleep them.
And they almost did.
Bleep them. I will not. I'm happy for Jason Benetti. I'm happy for Kansas City because I saw it coming. I predicted it in May about them being the team this year with Bobby Witt Jr.
Plus, they spent a little, like Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha. Nice job. You deserve it.
And
that.
I love Sal Perez. Bleep the Twins forever. Forever.
Noted.
Just so you know. Stupid Nick Punto.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say. I got scared.
Ron Gardenhire. Oh, we like to score in the first inning because it gives a better. You can go. Look, we're going to talk with Patrick Manley or else I'm going to lose my mind.
And we need to because Cole Kmet became the first long snapper ever to win Special Teams Player of the Week.
We're going to ask Patrick if he's mad about that next here on The Score.